Opinions expressed on the following program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers.
This is Crosswinds with Carl Zahn on 1590 WSMN. You think you've heard it all week long? Well, you haven't heard what Carl has to say. Carl Zahn brings all his experience in business and in entertainment to discussing the news of the day that affects us all in southern New Hampshire. And his aviation experience helps him keep his cool when the controversy heats up and things get turbulent. So fasten your seatbelt, put your tray in the upright and locked position, and get ready to join the conversation. 1590 WSMN presents Crosswinds, Crosswinds with Carl Zahn.
Good afternoon, New Hampshire, and welcome back to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn at 1590 WSMN, Nashua's news and talk. Here in studio with sidekick and producer Allie Riccadone. Riccadone, how you doing, Allie?
I'm very well. How are you?
Allie was just complaining about her air conditioning bill, and I'm sure that is a popular theme across the state as this heat wave draws to a close that grabbed so much of the country here. Man, it's funny how people talk about the heat. We whine in the winter, as I do, about the cold and the snow, and then when summer gets here, we whine about the heat. And all kinds of warnings and alarms and be careful, don't go out, it's too hot, don't do this, make sure you drink plenty of water. Yeah, we get it. It's hot out. We know how to handle that. It's hot. Drink a lot of fluid. Don't stand in the sun naked for too long, or hopefully not at all, because that is a felony in some states. So it's hot. It's summertime. I think it's drawing to a close today. I think is the break in the huge heat and humidity that we had. And it was a brutal week, no doubt about it. Thursday and Friday, 100 degrees. When it's hovering around 100 degrees or better, and it's very humid out, then that is hot indeed. Our condolences here at the studio to the family of Major Jeremy Grasick from Atkinson, New Hampshire, who died in a base jumping accident in Switzerland. Major Grasick was a decorated Marine and had been on tour in Iraq. And New Hampshire loses one of his one of our own. This was not a military accident. He was base jumping, which is jumping off of fixed objects with a parachute. So you kind of jump off the edge of a cliff and you parachute down. So Major Grasick was a lived life to the fullest, according to his parents. He was that kind of kid. He loved thrill-seeking kind of stuff. He was a great Marine, served his country, and we thank him for his service and his family and our condolences to them. Sounds like a good kid. Lived life to the fullest. And, you know, I was reading about this guy. I'm always intrigued by people like this who are so... I mean, this kid, there's more than we can go into on the air, but he was just into everything. Grabbed life by the horns, taking a big bite of the apple, and I'm sure if we could speak to him today that, you know, people who do stuff like this, I think they're well aware of the danger that's involved. The risk is kind of what draws them to it in the first place, and I think for most people like that, you know, they would concede that the danger is worth... It's worth it to them. It's an equation that they've already done in their head, and they know that this stuff that they do is risky, could cost them their lives, and they do it anyways because that's just how they want to live. And I have tremendous respect for that. So we grieve for him with his family. It's a loss of a great New Hampshire resident there, but died with pedal to the metal, just the way he lived his life. And there is something honorable and sweet about that that I can't quite put my finger on, but nonetheless, it's there. The big news across the country, of course, the debt ceiling talks in Washington, which have come to a fevered pitch. It's just been amazing watching this unfold from all kinds of different aspects. And by the way, 603-816-1590 if you want to chirp in. 603-816-1590 if you want to give us a call. It's been amazing watching the president deal with this and kind of see the short you know, he's got a little bit of a temper, the president. We've talked about this on the show before. When he doesn't get his way or when the going gets tough, he gets a little short. And to everyone who follows this is aware that last week he abruptly walked out of the talks. And it happened late Friday on the other side of the aisle when Majority Speaker Boehner said that he was all done with the talks on the Republican side. Said, you know, we can't seem to get what we want here, and the President Obama feels the same way, that he can't get what he wants. So there just seems to be no middle ground for these people. And it's very interesting. I mean, look, the crux of the matter is federal spending. Republicans and conservatives want deep, deep cuts in federal spending as a deal, you know, part of the deal for raising the debt ceiling, even a temporary fix. And they also say, conservatives, and I agree with this, that the country has enough money coming in to pay the interest on the debt, to pay the Social Security and Medicare payments, and to pay our military. And other things are going to suffer and possibly be shut down in the meantime, but at least it's a short-term fix where the important things get paid and gives us some time to work this out. And I have to say that I'm with the conservatives, the Republicans on this side of it, and even the conservatives and Republicans are split down the middle. There are about 21, I think, give or take a few, Tea Party Republicans who are saying absolutely no, no deal making, not going to raise the debt ceiling, period. And in addition to that, they want deep cuts. And I think I'm kind of on that side of the equation here. It's interesting watching O'Reilly last week. I tuned into him one night. He was having kind of a knockdown dragout with Laura Ingraham, who was saying that she agreed with the Tea Party people, who said just a firm no as far as raising the debt ceiling goes. And O'Reilly felt that that was a radical position from the right, and that there had to be some negotiating involved. I'm not sure. I mean, I think, look, people make the argument that we've raised the debt ceiling before. We did it under President Bush. We've done it many times before. And so the Democrats would argue that the reason Republicans are being so obstinate about it at this point is it's a personal thing with President Obama, and it's a personal thing against the Democrats. I don't agree. I think the difference here this time around is the economy is, I mean, to say this economy is suffering would be a gross understatement. I mean, we are in a boxed into a corner here, folks. This is dire, dire stuff. And I am of the mind that we can't raise the debt ceiling. We can't. They want to borrow another $2 trillion. I mean, it's amazing. Under this president, in just 2.5 years, he has spent more than the entire government spent in the last 230 years in this country. I mean, think about that. Every administration from George Washington forward spent less than this president has spent since he's been in office. I mean, that's an incredible, incredible figure. So if they raise this debt ceiling, we're getting up to the tune of $14, $15 trillion national debt. It's just incredible. I like this cap cut deal that the Tea Party people are putting forward, a cap cut balance that says we're going to cap the spending, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling, we're going to cut federal spending dramatically, and they want a balanced budget amendment. Written into the Constitution, which is a big deal. And most people say, well, it's showboating because you know you can't get it because it's got to be ratified by all 50 states. And it is a big deal to get a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. But I think we need it. I mean, look, America hasn't encountered problems greater than this in our history. We can't get it together to pull this one out. I mean, I really think that we have to do that. I think we have to have a balanced budget amendment that basically says, look, in any given year, the country cannot spend more than it takes in. Just like a family, just like a business, just like any other logical enterprise on the face of the planet, we can't spend more than we take in. And even that doesn't take into account the massive, massive debt that this country has. I mean, just to say you have a balanced budget in any given year, that's great news, and it certainly gets things, it gets the tide rolling in the other direction. But it doesn't solve the problem of the huge national debt, which is just no question that the next generation and the generation after that is going to be saddled with this thing. And that's just a horrific, I think, legacy for any generation to foist upon the next generation. I certainly feel bad that I'm of the generation that is going to hand to my kids this huge debt when they get to the age where they're working and making a paycheck. The 20 or 30% of their paycheck is going to have to go exclusively for Social Security and Medicare because past administrations have robbed that lockbox. All that money that comes out of your paycheck every week, folks, you just look on your paycheck. That FICA withdrawal and the Social Security withdrawal that supposedly goes into a lockbox. The lockbox is empty. As Michelle Bachmann said, you open a lockbox, there's mothballs and butterflies. There's nothing in there. All that money's been spent. So not only does the next generation have to put aside for their own retirement, Social Security and Medicare, they've got to pay for ours. And it's just an abysmal, abysmal situation. 603-816-1590 if you have an opinion on it. WSMNradio.com to learn more about our programming here and the station. It's interesting stuff, and I really think we're at a turning point in American history here where we just have to make some tough choices, and people don't want to do it. This administration, incredibly, how loath they are to stop the federal spending and to accept it. A lot of these entitlement programs and stuff like that, it's got to go. It's got to go. Just reading a piece this morning in the Hippo with Representative Bill O'Brien from Mount Vernon, New Hampshire, who's been pretty effective up there, and talking about some of the tough choices that New Hampshire has had to make with their budget and that there's social programs and people who need stuff who aren't going to be able to get it anymore, who got used to having that governmental stipend to help them out with their situation. And look, this is just another example of the hard choices that we have to make, that people are going to suffer. We're all going to suffer through this. But I'll tell you what, if we don't do it now, the suffering will be tenfold down the road. This is like conquering an addiction or a drinking problem or spending a gambling problem. You can put it off, you can put it off, you can kick the can down the road, but I'll tell you what, we keep kicking this can down the road, we're going to run out of road, period. This country is up against it. We have to get serious about this. I don't feel good about it because I don't feel like I'm one of the people, and lots of Americans feel this way. Look, I didn't spend myself into oblivion. I didn't sign up for all these entitlement programs and support them. But I'm going to have to help pay our way out of it. As an American, I guess I'm willing to do it. I have no choice, but I want to get going on it. I want to get it over with. I don't want to raise the debt ceiling. Crosswinds with Carl Zahn. More after these brief messages.
Listen to People Sense for Business, hosted by Deb Titus, every Monday at 10 a.m. on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. Deb is the co-founder and principal of Human Capital Solutions, LLC, with 27 years of experience in assisting businesses achieve maximum results in leadership, sales, communication, and customer service. You will hear the tip of the day, interviews with guests representing local businesses, news, and anecdotes. It's People Sense for Business with Deb Titus, every Monday at 10 a.m. on 1590 WSMN and WSMNradio.com.
If your child is sick over and over again, it could be PI, a defect in the immune system that affects millions. Early detection can give children a chance to dream.
Jeffrey Modell Foundation. Visit us at info4pi.org or call 1-866-INFO-4-PI.
Recently, the U.S. Navy delivered tons of food to hungry people halfway around the world.
But you could help someone in your own community simply by donating a can of soup.
Last week, a Navy doctor saved the life of a total stranger.
Just like you could, by giving a pint of blood.
Right now, a Navy captain is providing guidance to 5,000 young men and women at sea.
while there's at least one young person in your neighborhood who could use your guidance.
Next month, a team of Navy Seabees will change a child's life by building a school in an impoverished area.
You could do the same simply by volunteering once a week to read at a school right down the street.
The men and women of America's Navy do some amazing things to make the world a better place. So can you. Whether it's by donating food or simply giving time, right in your own backyard. Brought to you by America's Navy.
One in five Americans has come into contact with these bloodthirsty creatures, or knows someone who has. Reports of infestations have reached pandemic proportions. Bedbugs. They feed on human blood and can leave skin erupting in red, itchy welts. They're also very difficult to control. Bedbugs do not just live in bedrooms, but wherever people go. Schools, movie theaters, offices. Not even hospitals are immune to their invasions. The only way to prevent the spread of bedbugs is for each and every one of us to be vigilant and proactive, to learn the simple daily steps that minimize the chances of bringing bedbugs into our lives. And if they do get in, don't go it alone. Bedbugs are most effectively controlled using the help of a qualified and licensed pest professional. Learn more about the bedbug pandemic and how to protect your home and family at pestworld.org.
Plan your night, plan your weekend. Listen for the WSMN Community Calendar all day long on 1590 WSMN.
This is Greg Gutfeld, the host of Red Eye on Fox News. You're listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, who's basically a jerk.
No kidding, Greg. Tell me something I don't know, you big dork. Welcome back to Crosswinds at 1590 WSMN with your host, Carl Zahn. That was Greg Gutfeld, host of Fox News' Red Eye, the fabulous TV program, which I've been honored to have been a participant in two or three times. I hope I'm going back in August, and I'll let you know. You'll be the first to know here at Crosswinds, 1590 WSMN. Welcome back. 603-816-1590, WSMNradio.com. And Carl, K-A-R-L, from NH.com to learn more about me and my schedule of stand-up comedy appearances. I'll be at Fodie's Tavern this Thursday night coming up, July 28th, right here in Nashua. Comedy show that's been gaining steam down there over the last couple of years and hosted, put together by Elena Susco. So I will be there at Fodie's, Fodie's, F-O-D-Y-S, Fodie'sTavern.com. This Thursday night. And I also want to remind people on August 14th, Sunday, I will be hosting a big event at Alpine Grove in Hollis, New Hampshire to support the Kim Cates Fund, kimcatesfund.org. This is a nonprofit put together by her husband, David Cates. If you might recall, Kim Cates was the Mount Vernon mother who was murdered in her own home there in Mount Vernon in a home invasion a little over 2 years ago. Her husband David has put together this scholarship to award money to local medical, promising medical students to help them further their medical career. And we hope you have a big turnout over there. It's going to be a great, great day. I think it starts at 1 o'clock, goes to 8 o'clock at night. You can go to kimcatesfund.org to learn more about that or get your tickets. There's going to be several bands. Two stages. There'll be a separate stage going on with kids stuff and a stage for music for the adults. So it's going to be a great day, and we hope everyone will come out to support that. We're talking about the debt ceiling and whether or not to raise the debt ceiling and that the government is in an impasse. House Speaker John Boehner bailed out Friday night saying that just couldn't seem to arrive at any concession with the president. President equally flabbergasted and frustrated called for an emergency meeting Saturday, yesterday, demanded that all the congressional leaders be there. They had that meeting. That meeting went nowhere. The deadline is August 2nd to raise the debt ceiling, and the administration is using what I think is to a certain extent a scare tactics, telling people, elderly people, that they won't get their Social Security payments or are not sure we're going to be able to pay it. That's all hogwash, because there is enough money there to pay interest on the debt so we don't default on our debt payment. and enough money to make the Social Security, Medicare payments, and military and stuff like that, all the essential stuff. I'll tell you what, you know, Chicken Little might be suing for trademark infringement here as far as the sky is falling. We've heard that so many times, and you remember we heard it when the big TARP bailout under the waning days of President Bush's administration, and we heard it again when the Obama administration did their big stimulus package, all of which tens and hundreds of billions of dollars of stimulus money that did absolutely nothing for the economy, did nothing to create jobs. Most of the money, we don't even know where it went. So you can't really blame the public when we hear the sky is falling. The sky is falling time after time. It's like the boy who cried wolf, you know. You just wonder, yeah, I mean, really? If August 2nd passes and we haven't come to some conclusion here and we haven't raised the debt ceiling, really? Is the world going to end? I'm suspicious at best with that clarion call of warning. You know, I was one of many that back during the TARP money and the stimulus money wondered aloud, what happens if we just let it go? If we don't do a big stimulus package and just let all the companies that are too big to fail, if we let them fail, let the whole thing wash out and see where the chips land and then rebuild it from there. At some point, you know, you've got to get the thing on the ground. You got to get this airplane on the ground, get the problems fixed, figure it out, and then continue along the way. We seem to be, you know, trying to fix stuff with clothes hangers and duct tape, and it just doesn't work. So I take a lot of, I don't buy it. I don't buy it that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, everything comes apart and the government shuts down. What does that mean, the government shuts down? You know, it happened under Clinton, if you remember, when they had this similar argument, and everybody warned us about the perils of the federal government shutting down, and then the federal government did indeed shut down to an extent, and nothing happened. I think most of us didn't notice anything. You know why? Because most of the federal government employees don't do anything anyways. So, you know, the day comes that they don't show up for work for several days, nobody notices anything, you know. Look, it's time to streamline this thing. It's time to really get serious about it. We had Congressman Thaddeus McCotter in studio a couple of weeks ago, who's now a presidential candidate, and I wrote an opinion piece for the Union Leader that I think followed that appearance in studio by a couple of days. And I like McCotter. I like he's a true fiscal conservative. I'm hoping that he catches on up here in New Hampshire. He's going to have to hit this state hard to do it, to get attention up here and start raising some money. But, you know, out of everybody, I like this guy a lot because he gets the fiscal end of it. He gets that true fiscal conservative. We have to shrink federal government, not a little, not in bits and pieces, but we've got to do it dramatically, and we need to do it right away. When McCotter was in, I spoke to him about the lack of urgency that I see in this administration. And in the country in general, to a large degree. I think, you know, some things are urgent. You know, some things are urgent. You have to deal with it. I think when McCotter was in, I gave him the example of, you know, the barn being on fire. And, the federal government's answer to everything is to form a committee. You know, when the barn's on fire, you grab a freaking hose and get to work. You know, that's my feeling as a New Hampshire pragmatist. Let's get on it. Let's get on it. Let's stop kicking this thing down the road. Let's deal with it like Americans do and get our financial house back in order here. I'm convinced that the lack of growth in the economy and the lack of jobs coming across, all these things, it's not the government. It's not the government's job to create jobs. It's the government. It's the best thing they can do for us is to get out of the way. I think most of the people who have money in this country and lots of businesses, and I was listening to some guy on the radio last week, who's a big businessman who employs lots of people, and he said everyone in his community is just holding on to their money. They're holding their cards. They're not moving. And that's because there is zero confidence in the economic future of this country and where it's headed. And I think that confidence is a big, big key into the puzzle here. If we can't get people confident that the country's going to pull out of this, that the country's going to grow, that the country's going to recognize where the problems are and then address it and fix it, then nobody moves. Nobody does anything, because why would they? Nobody wants to gamble anymore. You know, they're pulling their chips into the table. They're walking away, and they're saying, you know what, I don't have a good feeling about this thing, and I don't want to keep taking chances. And until we get some confidence, until we get some good news here, I think that that trend just continues, and we're in a spiral. I really do think we're in a spiral in this country where it could really take a serious nosedive and go right off the end of the cliff if we don't get a rein on it real soon. 603-816-1590 if you got a comment on any of that. Also, big news this week in Norway, a serious terrorist attack. I think they've located a suspect or named a suspect, but I don't think they've named a terrorist organization who has claimed responsibility for it. But they do think that it's associated with Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda has long held Norway as a target. 80 people, and many of them children, gunned down at a camp. And at the same time, a bomb within hours, definitely two attacks that were combined and part of a concerted effort at the same time as this massive shooting happened in Norway, with all these, many of them children, gunned down, just murdered. At the same time, a bomb went off in Oslo, Norway, killing people. So, again, this is... another wake-up call for all of us that the war on terror is still alive and well, and the need to have a war on terror is still alive and well. I've said here before in this program for many years that, eventually I'm convinced that we're going to see this in this country. And they call these things soft targets, and what they do is they go after places like this, like a children's camp or, a kind of ubiquitous office building, instead of the targets that we tend to protect and pay attention to in this country: federal buildings, IRS buildings, government buildings, military outposts, all the places that we normally watch that keep a particularly sharp eye out for terrorist attacks. What we don't do is watch the malls and the gathering spots and just these what they call soft targets. It could be the Pheasant Lane Mall in New Hampshire, or some mall in Milwaukee, or a school, or just, and what they do is, I think these terrorists, they want to have a string of these attacks where they have a whole bunch of targets like that lined up, and then they all go off at the same time. And look, we know they're capable of it. We know they're willing to do it, not just willing but anxious. And we also know that we're very vulnerable to that, because we live in a free country, and you can't have a free country and not be vulnerable to that kind of stuff. But I'm telling you, when that starts happening over here, and I hope it doesn't, but my gut feeling tells me it's going to, when that happens here, man, we got a whole new ball game on our hands. We have a whole new ball game on our hands. Look at how difficult it's been just to protect air travel since 9/11. So think about that. Since 9/11, we've gone through all the security at airports. It keeps getting worse. Now you've got the pat-downs and the full body scans, and you've got passengers complaining about that, and I don't blame them. And is air travel any safer because of all that? I wonder. I just wonder. I think the Israeli model is a lot better, where they just look for suspicious-looking people and question them. Over here, we tend to take every 10th person, whether it's an 85-year-old grandmother or a 7-year-old. We pull people out of line at random and somehow think that that's protecting us. I'm not so sure it is. I'll tell you what, if someone opened an airline today and told me, look, we're not doing any security stuff, no pat-downs, no full-body scans, but we are going to check all the luggage, we are going to check all the cargo underneath the plane, and we are going to question people who look suspicious or act suspicious, I would fly that airline all day long. I'm telling you. I would take that ride all day long over the other place, where you got to have every part of your body probed and patted and touched, and, endure having your kids go through that, or your grandmother, all this ridiculous stuff that they do. I would fly the other airline all day long that took a more common sense approach to providing security to passengers. But my original point is, if you carry that forward to, let's say there's a huge attack at a mall or something like that, then you know our knee-jerk response in this country is going to be, okay, now we have to have security at malls. So everybody who goes into a mall is going to have an airline-type pat-down or body scan or probed and prodded. I mean, are you kidding me? And, you know, this is the way that these terrorists are winning against us. They're winning this war. I mean, 9/11 cost us, never mind the 3,000 that died and all the damage to property and the lawsuits and the cost to rebuild. Add on top of that what we've had to do to our airline industry in terms of security. I don't think you could even put a number on what that day cost this country. And that's a win for the other side. That's how they want to do it. That's how they want to bring us down, you know. They don't have the Air Force that we have. They don't have the battleships that we have. They don't have the big military that we have. But what they do have is patience, and they have legions of people willing to sacrifice their own lives in the name of this cause. And that's a tough enemy, man. I mean, when you got people willing to strap a bomb on for your cause, that's tough to beat. That's really tough to beat. You got people willing to walk into a mall or walk into a children's camp and gun down 80 people in cold blood. You know, that's the one thing that we don't have here. I mean, we have military men and women who protect us, and God bless them for doing it. But there's a difference between someone who's willing to risk their lives to go into the service and someone who's willing to strap a bomb on and go blow up innocent people in the name of some, you know, religious cause. We don't have that. I don't want us to have that, but that's what we're fighting against. And it's a pretty daunting enemy. It's a pretty daunting enemy. So this thing in Norway, although it's thousands of miles away, it bears watching for every American, because that could be us. And think about it, Norway. I don't know about you, but when I heard of a terrorist attack in Norway, the first thing I thought was, Norway? It just doesn't make any sense. They're Norwegians, for crying out loud. Probably the most docile culture in the world. Norwegians, well known for their morose attitude. I mean, they're not a party nation. They're not a politically antagonistic nation. You never hear Norway sticking their head in and getting all, you know, it's like Canada or something. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that there's an attack there. But, you know, that very element is part of what gives me a lot of pause and say, Norway, you know. I just have a gut feeling that it's coming here, coming to a theater near us soon. And I think that when it does, if it does, that opens up a whole new ball of wax over here in terms of our security in this country. It's going to damage our economy. It's going to damage our confidence. It's going to send us into another spiral of excess security measures everywhere. And all of that combined just has a horrific and terrific effect on our economy. And our economy cannot stand one more brick being kicked out of the bottom of the column, and that's what's coming our way. Crosswinds with Carl Zahn. More stuff right around the corner.
Strapped for cash during these tough economic times? Looking for collateral on a short-term loan? If so, come down to Nashua Loan and Jewelry, the largest gold and diamond buyer north of Boston. Nashua Loan and Jewelry is a collateral lending institute which offers 30-day loans on items such as gold, diamonds, sterling silver, high-end electronics, fine art, and anything of decent value. All information is held in the strictest confidence and is done without any applications, financial statements, or credit checks. You could also sell your quality merchandise for cash. Nashua Loan and Jewelry also offers exceptional value on new and pre-owned merchandise, including jewelry, watches, tools, electronics, and much, much more. Why buy retail when you could shop wholesale at Nashua Loan and Jewelry, the area's best place to buy and sell? Check them out at 14A Broad Street in Nashua or give them a call at 595-PAWN. That's 595-PAWN and ask for Michael. You could also visit their website at nashuapawn.com. Does your vision make it hard to read, shop, cook, or see the TV or street signs? If your vision can't be corrected, even with standard glasses, contact lenses, medicine, or surgery, you may have low vision. Vision rehabilitation can help you live more safely and independently. It combines training, career counseling, support, and adaptive and visual devices to make the most of your remaining vision. Ask your eye care professional. It's your vision. Make the most of it. For more information, call the National Eye Institute at 1-877-569-8474.
What do your status updates say? What if every ounce of your being helped update the status of a person, and in turn they did the same for you? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Get interactive at peacecorps.gov/game.
Now the New Hampshire Fisher Cats games are right here. 1590 WSMN.
John McCain, and you're listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn on WSMN 1590 in Nashua. You know, I kind of like this little jerk.
Calling me a little jerk, huh, McCain? Why don't you come over here and do that? Senator John McCain. Should have been President McCain. But the country had other ideas. Thanks for the surprise. Allie's been surprising me today with our liners because I love surprises. So every time we come back from break, it's like a big birthday party for me. It's like Christmas morning, and I hear the liner, and I just go, oh, what a great surprise, Senator McCain. Welcome back to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk, WSMNradio.com to learn more about our programming here, and Carl, K-A-R-L, from NH.com to learn more about me and see us. Schedule of my stand-up comedy appearances. Comedy will be getting busier soon as fall comes along. I'll be hosting Sunday, August 14th at Alpine Grove in Hollis, New Hampshire, a fundraiser day for the Kim Cates Fund, kimcatesfund.org to learn more about that or donate if you wish. I said earlier, there's a fund set up, nonprofit fund set up by her husband, David Cates, to remember his wife, and they will award scholarships to promising medical students in the area so that they may advance their medical careers and become doctors and nurses, as was Kim Cates. 603-816-1590. If you want to chirp in about anything, we'd be happy to take your call. Amy Winehouse dead at age 27. Who would have thunk it? That bastion of mental and physical health, Amy Winehouse dead at age 27. I wasn't a big Amy Winehouse fan. Didn't really, I just barely know who she is. I know that she was a very popular and celebrated train wreck of an artist. And I read that recently she had canceled all of her upcoming appearances after showing up drunk on stage and being booed by the 20,000 fans that were there. So she's a young girl that, entertainer, singer, had terrible drug, yes, and alcohol problems. Allie is over there giving me a little bottle tip hand signal. Yeah, she was a drinker. And it's funny, in this article, they're comparing her to Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and, all these other rock stars. I'm not so sure about that. I mean, Hendrix, Janis Joplin, for one thing, they were, like, tons more talented than this girl was. And that was a different time also when, that kind of heavy-duty drug abuse and stuff like that was pretty new to our culture. And, I think for some reason, maybe I'm just being nostalgic, but I think at that time it was just more unusual and consequently more dramatic. When Hendrix died of a drug overdose and Janis Joplin, it was just, it was new to our culture. I mean, Amy Winehouse, is anybody surprised? I'm not surprised. She's dead. She drank and drugged herself to death. And, they're comparing it to Kurt Cobain and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, I guess I understand it in a way, but on the other hand, if you get into the entertainment business like that, if you're a singer and you're, I mean, anything you do where you get into the entertainment business, they always cite as part of the drug and alcohol problems that these people have is that they were struggling with their fame. Now, you know, I guess I don't understand the struggle with fame. I mean, if you think you're going to have a struggle with fame, don't get into the entertainment business. I mean, she seemed to do everything possible to become famous. She did, financially successful. And I guess I don't understand why people don't just enjoy that. You work so hard to get there. It seems to be what you want. And in many ways, you're in a glorious station in life. Why not enjoy it? Why let the fame become part of your downfall or your excuse for drugging and drinking yourself to get to death? I don't get it. You know, it's not that I'm not without compassion for those people, but yes, I am without compassion for those people. I'm not without compassion for those people. I just don't get it, you know. Enjoy it. Get your shit together. Whoops. And enjoy the ride. Did I say shoot? Came out of something else, didn't it? Yeah. I think I meant to say get your sheet together. But it's just aggravating to me, you know. I feel bad for her, and what I really feel bad for are her siblings, her parents, and stuff like that, because, you know, you got to watch. How do you watch a child go through that? Achieve success, achieve fame. You know, life should be your oyster at that point, and instead you just blow it up like it's just all a bad dream. I don't understand it. It's funny reading a piece on Brian Regan, who's one of my favorite comedians and is going to be at Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom, in fact, Thursday. And if you've never seen this guy, one of the best comedians out there, squeaky clean, just a hilarious comedian. He was talking about how he wanted it and wanted comedy because he didn't want to get up in the morning to go to work. And he said when he first started thinking about comedy and went to a comedy show and noticed that the guy went on at 8 o'clock, he remembered thinking to himself, yeah, I can do this. I can be up for work by 8 o'clock at night. And that was his catalyst for wanting to go into comedy, the hours. You know, but here's a guy who worked hard, made, you know, he's got a great career going. He's coining money. He's married, got kids, good guy. And he's just enjoying the ride. And at the end of this piece, he just expresses his gratitude at being so fortunate, you know. And it's more than good fortune. He's worked really hard at it. He's been smart. He's played his cards right. He's worked very, very hard. But just to see somebody cognizant of it and then be grateful and say, look, you know, yeah, I worked hard. Yeah, it took a lot to get here and all that. But at the end of the day, I'm fortunate and I'm grateful. And I've got a great life, and I just couldn't be happier. And, you know, that just seems like the more human response to me to fame. And you never hear people like that complaining about their fame or the pressures, the burden of fame. They keep it in check. You know, it's one of my favorite things about Dennis Miller is that, you know, he's a down-to-earth guy. He's a blue-collar guy. He's never really lost the impression of himself as a working-class guy from Philly. That's how I remember one time in studio with him was shortly after Michael Jackson died, and he made a comment about fame, and he said, you know, it's a great and wonderful thing, but don't let fame get its head around you. And that will always stick with me as some sort of sage advice for anyone who's on the cusp of being famous or has to deal with that. And it's real simple and pragmatic advice. Don't let it get its head around you. Fame is a notion. It's not really real, you know. You are who you are, and I don't think that changes no matter where you end up in life. And if you keep yourself grounded like that, then you survive it, you know. Amy Winehouse should have had a great career, and instead she's dead at 27. And I don't know, sad situation, but certainly no surprise. I also wanted to plug while I'm here, August 13th and 14th, the Boston Portsmouth Air Show at Pease Airport in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. This year featuring the Air Force Thunderbirds. I think there's a website there, bostonportsmouthairshow.com or something like that. Portsmouthbostonairshow.com. I'm sure Allie will research that for me as she's doing right now. But anyways, you get the picture. August 13th and August 14th, I'm sure you can Google it and find out information. Let me just say, if you've never been to an air show, you know, I've ranted and raved about this many times on the show, that aviation is such an American, and I'm a pilot, 20-year pilot, so I love aviation. But it is, it's an American institution. We were the first to fly with the Wright brothers, and it's just an American institution, and I love it. And air shows, believe it or not, are one of the most heavily attended events ever. They outdo football games and the Super Bowl and all that stuff. And so can I just say, folks, it's a great family day if you decide to do one of these things, or you're looking for something to do that weekend. I was there last summer when the Navy Blue Angels performed over there, and we're really lucky to have a major air show happening every year in New Hampshire here now, because prior to that, years ago, used to be at Otis Air Force Base down on the Cape, and it's BostonPortsmouthAirShow.com. Thank you, Allie. BostonPortsmouthAirShow.com. Tickets still available. Prior to them doing it at Pease, you used to have to go to Otis, and then when they closed Otis, they had them out at Barnes and Springfield, Mass. So I hadn't gone to one for a while because it was just too long a ride to take the family, and it's a long day once you're there. And the last time I was at one at Barnes in Springfield, it took me like 3 hours to get out of the parking lot at the end of the day, and that was just too much for me. As much as I enjoy it, I can't deal with the, having to take 3 or 4 hours to get on the highway once you leave there. But I have to say, last year, went to Portsmouth. It's well done. I mean, we were parked in 10 minutes. We were out of there in 10 minutes when the show was over. They've got it set up great. They've got great parking all around that airport. And I can't tell you enough what a great day it is, a great family day. There's stuff for the kids there. There's vendors. There's all kinds of aircraft to look at on the ground, from old World War II bombers to fighter jets and all kinds of small planes, jump houses for the kids and stuff like that. It's a great, great family day at a really reasonable price. And if the weather's good, let me tell you, you won't be disappointed. The Air Force Thunderbirds, as are the Navy Blue Angels, just an amazing, amazing thing to watch. If that doesn't get your patriotic blood pumping, then I don't know what will. These guys are phenomenal. And on top of that, they've got Mike Goulian, who's a world-famous aerobatic flyer, Sean Tucker, one of my favorite aerobatic, former world champion many times over. Sean Tucker, folks, it's worth the trip just to see Sean Tucker fly. Trust me. This guy does stuff with an airplane that you just can't even believe. So it's a great family day, all kinds of stuff to do. If the weather's great, you can't go wrong. And check it out, BostonPortsmouthAirShow.com. You won't be disappointed if you take that ride, let me tell you. And I think I've spoken about it on the show before. One of my favorite things, aside from the flying, when the Blue Angels fly and the Thunderbirds fly, they do this ceremony before these guys fly. Where they march out to their planes and they do this very, very choreographed presentation of the guys going up to their planes, and they're saluting their mechanics, and they got that brisk, crisp military walk. And I'm telling you, it just brings tears to your eyes to see our military, the cream of the crop, these guys, top guys flying. And to see them head out in this just amazing, amazing equipment that we've got now. I mean, our fighter jets now, folks, when you see the stuff that these planes can do and the stuff that these pilots can do with those planes, man, it just gets your blood pumping, you know, patriotic blood and otherwise. So don't miss it. That's a great day out there. And I'm glad to see that we have a major air show every year now right here in New Hampshire. It's easy to get to. It's an easy ride. You don't have the big, parking lot and getting in and out disaster, which has become the namesake of major air shows. And when I say major air show, that's something where the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds are performing. There's lots of little air shows that go on all over the country all the time, and also are great fun. But when I say major air show, that usually notes that either the Navy team or the Air Force team is performing there. And that's what really draws people to these things, is either the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds flying. So it was Blue Angels last year, Thunderbirds this year. Don't miss it, August 13th and 14th. That's in conflict with my Kim Cates Fund deal over there. But I am going on Saturday the 13th, and I will be at the Kim Cates Fund thing on the 14th. But either way, you ought to try to catch that air show and do it on Saturday so you can still make the thing in Hollis and support the Cates family and that great, great fund that they're putting together. Speaking to David Cates about it, I've met him a couple times in the course of putting this thing together over there. And what a great way to honor his wife. When you think about a medical scholarship and how that works, that some young person who's a promising medical student who might not otherwise be able to further their career past high school or into medical school, and with the help of this fund and the money that it's bringing in, will now be able to do that. What a great way to honor your fallen wife. You think about a medical student being able to go to school, become a nurse or doctor, the lives that they might save after having done so. And, you know, let's say you save a life and then that person becomes a doctor or a nurse or someone special and does something great. So it's got this kind of snapping a string effect that from one stepping stone to the next, the memory of Kim Cates will go on, not only for this lifetime, but from generation to generation. So I think this scholarship, the medical scholarship, was a really brilliant and thoughtful way to remember his wife by giving people a chance to be doctors and nurses that might not otherwise have the capability to do that. Because as you know, we're busy with our entitlement money in this country, giving education to the children of illegal immigrants and stuff like that. And if you're just a regular American who's worked hard and gone through school and now you're trying to get to medical school and maybe your family doesn't have the money to put you through, you're kind of up the creek, you know, unless you have some kind of ethnic card to play or some kind of social disenfranchisement card to play. For regular people, it can be hard to do and hard to put your kids through school. So, David, my hat is off to you. That's a great idea and a great way to honor your wife, and I hope people will support it in any way that they can. If you can send $5, let me tell you, they're grateful for it. They get it. Doesn't have to be a big donation. It doesn't have to be some big deal. Anything you can give whatsoever, your name goes on the list, and you will be remembered for your donation. And great people, David Cates, great guy. His daughter Jamie's doing wonderful. And it'll be my pleasure to be over there in August making the two of them laugh. Nothing could bring me more joy than to bring a smile to either one of those two faces who deserve it more than anybody I can think of on the face of the planet right now. There's two people who deserve a light moment, if ever there was. We'll be back next week. We'll keep you posted. Hope to have Congressman Thaddeus McCotter back in studio next time he's in town, and that I expect will be in the next few weeks. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. The heat is gone. It's just good old summertime right now. Thanks, Allie. See you next Sunday.